keep it alive. Through these lines I write, I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling and flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc, I rip to a tear. Switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope. So no overdose, cause it's dope. Yo, man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones, bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd. No, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you. I'm doing this for
teams. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Here with your host, Nick Burnaby of theantimedia.org. And I'm here on UCY.TV Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the same time, 8 p.m., Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern Time. I know it's a little late for you guys out there on the East Coast, but DB should be calling in shortly. He's a little got tied up in some traffic, but he should be calling into the show pretty soon here. But we're going to have a lot of bunch of cool callers tonight from a couple journalists to talk about some stories, some first-hand accounts and things like that, and hopefully some people from the March Against Monsanto and all kinds of cool stuff. And we got some big news coming out today about this, about these Chinese troops getting pulled out from Vietnam, because you got all this unrest taking place there. And of course, you know, in Vietnam, long history of violence. The French, you know, were occupying the place and taking their resources. Then we were doing it, and then, I mean, and now you just got this unrest, you know, this path of destruction that is left behind when you have these empires and these, you know, adventurism and foreign policy that just doesn't make any sense. You know, this is the kind of thing that happens afterwards. So now China's having to deal with that because it's close to them. We got this whole thing with Ukraine still just boiling over. Still no real solution in sight. Anyway, you got the Ukraine right sector, which is basically these neo-Nazi people, nationalistic, you know, racist people, fascists. And they're calling for guerrilla warfare and targeted assassinations of these eastern Ukrainians. And, you know, this is just another case of the U.S. backing, you know, the bad guys. One of these, enemy of your enemy is your friend type of idea. And it's just, I don't know, it's becoming just so apparent to people and to everyone that I've talked to that this foreign policy has just gotten completely out of hand. There's just nothing left of it. There's no salvaging this completely illogical foreign policy. And now you got the same thing happening once again down in Libya. Now that we knocked out the strongman Gaddafi, Now you got another battle going on in Libya where you got these tribal orders and these nationalists against these Islamic militants. And once again, these are people that we more or less backed when we went and did the overthrow of Gaddafi. And now the scary thing about Libya and Gaddafi and all this stuff is that if you think about it, it's more or less the first American war that was done mostly by drone. We didn't send any troops. Well, officially, we didn't send any troops on the ground. I'm sure we had CIA and special ops down there or whatever, but it was mostly drones, and drones dropping these Hellfire missiles and these other weapons that they have, whatever these drones use nowadays. And it basically kind of was a proving ground for our new drone offensive game rather than this just terrorist hunting stuff. I mean, they actually used the drones on the offensive there in Libya and knocked out Gaddafi, who had, you know, and I'm not trying to say Gaddafi was a great guy or anything like that, but the area was a lot more stable when it was Gaddafi, and the U.S. went in there and picked the winner, tried to set up a puppet government and all these things, and if you look at what happened, it just backfired. And we saw this backfire, this blowback in the case of Benghazi, which has now become this Republican, you know, talking point or whatever. But it all comes down to the same kind of thing, where it's mostly just blowback from things that we've been doing over there. And the people just, you know, there's going to, when we do these kind of things, when we overthrow governments, there's going to be certain people, certain groups that are not going to be okay with it. So, you know, there's going to be certain groups when we're taking out these governments, overthrowing the governments, for instance, with Ukraine, just like what's happening now in Libya, we're just going to see this constant instability. And at this point, you have to start wondering, is it by design? Because it's like every country that these people go into and these countries go into, and they do what they do, like with Vietnam, like with Libya, now what's happening in Syria, Ukraine. I mean, but maybe they want to destabilize these countries and just leave them destabilized. You know, it could be just another bigger part of the whole chess game. Who knows? I think DB has joined us now. Are you there, bro?
Yeah, I am, man. I'm in Denver, New York. I'm back from Vegas. Sorry, calling in from Bluetooth if it gets a little crackier spot here if I break up.
Oh, no worries, man. You sound pretty good.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound pretty good.
All right, cool.
So
we're...
I was just covering, you know, how basically the violence is you know, flaring back up in Tripoli in Libya, and now in Vietnam the Chinese have evacuated 2,000 people because there's some uprisings going on in Vietnam, and now we got this whole thing with Ukraine, you know, and it's all it seems like almost that these people are trying to destabilize these regions on purpose.
Correct. I mean, they'll try to stoke the nationalists. Fears of people, you know, Vietnam feels like their culture is under threat by China because China's all encompassing, and you know, the Ukraine, of course, has got trillions and trillions of dollars of resources to divvy up. So, yeah, these big giant super states are starting to either swallow up or coerce or dominate everything around them, a la 1984 with the three super states in that novel.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, one thing that I mentioned before you got on the line is how Libya was basically our first drone war, because if you remember back, there really wasn't much for any troops. We didn't really send troops into Libya other than special forces and CIA. And we didn't really have that many jets flying over. It was almost all done by drone. And that's one thing that's really frightening about Libya, and now we get to see what's going to happen after these drone battles go through and see what it does to people.
Right. I mean, everybody's got drones now. Iran's got drones. I mean, you name a country, they're working on drone tech, and they're not going to be fighting each other with them. These drones are not for some future war among countries. These drones are to keep the populations of these countries under control from the elite.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it seems like. And you start to see these drones coming back around and coming down, coming around, you know, flying over the U.S. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. We're actually going to have a caller that's going to call in hopefully later, Cassius Methyl. He was able to videotape a little drone flying right outside of his house and his neighbor's house down his neighborhood at like 12 at night. And, wow. And he got an interview with his neighbor that saw it too. So, I mean, this is right there in Sacramento, man. So, he's going to call in and talk about that hopefully a little bit later. But yeah, I mean, these drones, it's just like the Patriot Act. It's just like the NDAA. This stuff is going to come home to roost. The drug war. I mean, all this stuff. It's all connected, and it all comes home to roost.
Yep. I mean, we've lived inside of this impregnable citadel for our entire life. Most of us, since the end of World War II, nobody's been able to touch us, and I think that's changing now. I think we're vulnerable, and it could be by design from the global elites. But at the same time, if you want to continue to live in an American society, if you want this culture to survive, you have to understand that it's being attacked from within, and the drones are their only way to make everyone bow down. The troops won't fire on their own citizens, so the only thing left, autonomous drones, and that's where they're going, and that's the only reason they're creating this technology.
Yeah, and you know, it's not going to be some random guys out in the Middle East that are going to be getting blown up, and that's wrong as it is. People don't realize that because it's so far away, you know. And we went out this weekend. We did a street theater to bring awareness about these drone strikes overseas. And we had like a mock-up little Hellfire missile, and we flew it with balloons, and it actually fell out of the sky. You know, we had sound effects and all that stuff. But you wouldn't believe the amount of people when you talk to them about drones. Like, they're like, the first thing they think is like Star Wars. They're like, what do you mean? Like, we're like, yeah, there's drones dropping missiles on people in the Middle East on the daily, and these people are dumbfounded. They're like, what? No way. There's no way. That's unbelievable. That's crazy. It's like, dude, how do people not know this stuff? I thought that was common knowledge by now. I thought everyone knew that we were dropping missiles on babies and women in the Middle East. So, I mean, we still, you know, to me, it seems like the younger people do know about it. Almost all the younger people know about it. But, you know, it's the older people, 40 plus, that don't really know about it, you know, because I'm guessing a lot of people just don't spend time watching news. They don't watch news. They'd rather just watch like reality TV type stuff. So a lot of these people don't even know about this stuff, which in a way it's kind of a good thing. When it comes to some of these things, because then they don't get caught up in all the other hype too, you know, all this other political hype because they're not watching the news. So in a way it's a good thing. But you know, it was crazy. Easy to see that many people knew about what's going on, this foreign policy and all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mark Dice is the perfect proponent of how obvious it is that the American public is like totally uninformed. He does those, you know, expose type videos where he'll go out on Venice Beach, and he actually got like about 500 people to sign away their rights as American citizens as long as they got free food stamps for life. He does all these little things. The thing is that people are so unaware. They're so in their little world. They're so concerned about barely making ends meet, working shitty jobs, that when the hammer does drop, they're not going to know what the hell happened. So part of our, you know, use to society is being the Paul Revere, man, letting people know. A lot of people just simply don't even have it in them to keep up with what's going on. We do, and that's it's our job, so to speak. It's our calling. So it's not surprising to me, man. I talk to my own friends, and they're, like, bewildered at some of the stuff I tell them. And I'm not a great researcher. I just look online, and I keep reading things, and I find things out. So, yeah, man, the information's there. It's like they say, being stupid and being unintelligent is a choice in today's modern world.
Yeah, and like you said, man, it's our job. Anyone listening to this show, man, it's up to us really to spread the information, at least the stuff that really matters, man. I all this conspiracy stuff, like, in the end, it all still boils down to the same point, is that we have a effed up government and an effed up system and a bad way of running things. So, you know, all that stuff aside, at least get these important points out to your family and friends, you know, about this foreign policy and about all this stuff. So that way we can start getting conscious about our tax money once people start to get conscious about how much money they're spending in taxes and things like that, they're going to start turning a lot more to bartering and stuff like that, just out of an economic sense, just saying, oh, I could save money. Think about all the people that do this couponing stuff. I know my girlfriend does it, and it saves a lot of money. And once people find out, oh, well, if I can turn into this, go to this bartering economy, I can go without paying a lot of taxes, you know what I mean? So I think in the end, like, it all boils down to us mentally giving them their power, and then physically financing all this stuff that's going on, or if not financing, at least backing it, you know, and they're using us to back all this stuff that's going on.
Well, it just boils down to asking yourself, what does my government do for the amount I give them? When you live in a country like France, where they give you a 9-month maternity leave after you have a child, you don't mind paying 65 and 70% of your wages to tax because you're taken care of. But when you live here, where everything you can think of is privatized, and if you have anything given to you from the government, it's poor quality, we understand that free enterprise could do it better, and we're giving away our labor. That's all we're doing. We're giving away our labor for black ops, for wars around the world, and we're not getting any of these social advantages that people in Europe or Canada or even Latin America get. And, you know, when they say freedom isn't free, well, yeah, it's not. Your fake freedom costs you half of everything you earn, and it's been that way for a long, long time, and it's going to continue.
Yeah, and it's kind of like... In the U.S., we have the worst of both worlds. Like, you got these Western Europe social democracies where, yeah, you pay 60, 70% in taxes, but you get free healthcare, free education, all that stuff. But in the U.S., what we do here is basically the government runs the things that should be private, and then the private things run the things that should be government.
Right.
It's like backwards. So this whole system is like, it's like we pay almost as much, if not more, into it than anyone else, and then we get less services than anybody else at the same time. It's like a raw deal, and we're, everyone's basically completely bought into it. Hey, I think we have a caller on the line.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, man?
So, Cassius Methel, he's a journalist with us on the anti-media, and he lives up nearby Sacramento, and apparently there was a drone flying in his backyard. We talked about this a few minutes ago with this whole drone army thing going on with Libya and stuff. And we wanted to have you call in and see if you can give us a first-hand account of what this thing was, what you think it was, what it was doing, and you know, whatever other details you got.
Yeah, most definitely, man. Right now I'm walking on the streets of Sacramento where my friend Greg saw the drone actually a week ago, like after I saw it too. I've had many people in my neighborhood see the drone at night, and they were a little bit skeptical at first because the video footage I shot was, you know, it didn't really have much except for the lights because it was dark outside, but you could hear the buzzing sound distinctly. So I've had several other people, aside from just me and my neighbor, witness it. And actually, in other suburbs of Sacramento, other areas way far from me, Rosemont, Arden Arcade, these drones have been spotted too. And so the story is, I was sitting outside smoking a blunt, and this drone went through the trees in my backyard, these tall-ass evergreen kind of trees that go really tall. And I immediately knew that it had to be something like a drone or a toy helicopter because I saw it move in between the trees. So it proceeded to go, well, there's something flying over right now. Well,
wow.
That's weird.
Huh?
Oh, no, it's just a helicopter, but anyway, what was I saying? Yeah, so the drone proceeded from in between the trees in my backyard to my neighbor's backyard, and I ran inside to get the iPad to videotape it. I came back outside hoping it would come out again, and sure enough, right to, like, right above my neighbor's house, like 3-4 feet above it, and the thing that caught my eye was it stopped, and it perceived my movements, like, it was making a path, like, towards to the west of me, towards my backyard, but it stopped and started going my way just a little bit and stopped, you know, So she stood there basically, or hovered there, like, staring me down. That's what I felt like. It basically gave it a taste of its own medicine with my iPad camera, videotaped it, and when I got a little too creeped out by it staring me down, I walked inside. And the next day, I got an interview from my neighbor, and that's how it happened.
Oh. Yeah, that's crazy, man. I mean, it's either way, like, whether it turns out to be the drone was a police drone or a private drone, it's a total invasion of your privacy for it to be, you know, flying in your backyard right there. You know, it's ridiculous to not have that, at least that kind of right to privacy, you know. Hey, we have another caller on the line. How's it going? You're on the Anti-Media.
Hey, Christina Tobin here. How are you, Nick?
Hey, how's it going? We have Christina Tobin on the line from Free and Equal. She's the one that organized the United We Stand Fest back on the 10th. How's it going?
Really good. How are you tonight?
Pretty good. We just wanted to get someone on to talk about the fest and to talk about, you know, all the struggles that we went through and but at the same time how awesome it turned out. And then, you know, maybe a little bit of what you guys are planning heading, you know, moving forward.
Yeah, cool. It was great meeting you out there, Nick. And it was just one of those experiences that it was a very challenging experience to overcome. And I think myself and the team and supporters are even stronger because of it. But I definitely anticipate in the future things will be a lot smoother. We just had, you know, unexpected bumps in the road after working with, you know, UCLA so closely for 9 months, it felt like, or, you know, the rug was pulled out from underneath us, you know, the Tuesday before, and suddenly we had no venue. We went from the Poly Pavilion, you know, 10,000 people putting up six figures, full production team ready to go, everything, and the funding went through on time. And just when you're up against a bureaucracy, sometimes you can have some unexpected bumps, you know, at the last minute. But, you know, in the end we rose, and we ended up holding it up at the Lasco Theater last Saturday, and it just really was a dream come true to see this become a reality. And the kickoff, really, of, like, a child being born, you know, for this movement.
Yeah, you know, and to me, being down there and actually being able to be a part of it, you know, I was able to see what can happen when you know, you get some people together that are trying to do something, and even if you throw the whole world at them, basically, people find a way of kind of overcoming any of these obstacles and these hardships and this oppression type of stuff. Because, I mean, speaking for myself, in my opinion, I mean, I think the thing with UCLA was, you know, maybe a little bit politically done, and, you know, maybe underhandedly. The way that UCLA went about taking the venue and pulling the venue out from under. But what it showed is that we can actually accomplish a lot of awesome things when under the gun. And I think it's kind of just kind of that rule of the universe, rule of evolution, where that's just how evolution works. And that's why I'm so excited about kind of this whole movement, because it's a movement of the oppressed people, and the people that are oppressed are always the ones that innovate. They're always the ones with the new ideas and the ways to change things on a grand scale. Because the people that are comfortable, the bureaucracy, the establishment, the Republicans and Democrats, I mean, these guys are stagnant. They're stale. They're out of ideas. They have to try to buy ideas from young people. And I think that's why this movement is going to be so successful with Free and Equal and United We Stand, because we're evolving, you know, and the establishment is not evolving as quickly as we are. So in the end, that will probably be their downfall. So what do you think moving forward, like, we can do to try to keep this movement coming, where we start moving away from these old ideas and into these new ideas, like, you know, getting rid of the political parties and not having the Republicans and Democrats running the whole election and all this bureaucracy and corruption and all this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, overcoming seemingly odds that many believed could not, you know, or well, I don't know how to say it. It's just the system, you know, putting up so many roadblocks. It just goes to show that no matter what happens, when the people unite, there's no stopping this. I mean, the people want their country back. And the problem's even bigger than the party system. Democrats, Republicans, I mean, they're totally disconnected at the federal level. And the 0.0001% or whatnot of, you know, a few wealthy families or so, a dozen, 13, some say, you know, use tools like the two-party system and the Commission on Presidential Debates and mainstream media. I mean, the list goes on and on to the Federal Reserve and it just Hollywood and, I mean, to intentionally divide us and conquer. And so this movement is here to counter that. We're not about pointing fingers at the problems. I mean, we you know, follow the money. We see where the problems really derive from. But rather than pointing fingers, let's just fix it here at this movement, positive, powerfully, peacefully. I mean, the system wants people to get upset and angry and protest. And, you know, it's no coincidence that, you know, that there's a lot of, you know, tools that the system has prepared, you know, from the NDAA to the Patriot Act to all the tanks that have been distributed, 150,000 throughout the U.S. I mean, these are real things. So when we unite across the spectrum on the bigger issues that we can agree on, like that we should not have NDAA, the drone issue, I know you've been touching a lot on lately, it's just not good, and so on, we can recognize that the real root of our problem is electoral fraud. I mean, we have to reform and replace all these Bs, Rs, just whatever party they're with or whatnot, just not honest candidates that are controlled by money and politics, and replace them with honest candidates, beginning with the 2000, of course, 14 and 16 congressional races.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's all about building out these new ideas, and because these people know how to, they're prepared for a head-on fight, but if you look back at like the American Revolution, it wasn't a kind of head-on fight. It was a lot of it was guerrilla warfare and stuff like that, you know. And it's kind of these. I think it's kind of the same kind of tactics. We don't want to go after them by pointing fingers at them. We want to go after them by making something a lot better, right? So
it's kind of
this idea that everyone has to, you know, everyone can speak for themselves type of thing. And I think that is a huge trend going on with the people, with especially with the younger generations. And a lot of people think that these kids are just lost to video games and stuff, but it's not true. There's a lot of very, very bright kids out there, and there's a lot of them. And I mean, how often do we hear these discoveries or these inventions by these 13-year-olds, like that girl in Egypt that found a way to make power out of banana peels and stuff? I mean, people give up on this young generation, but in my opinion, I think that they're going to be the most influential generation that we've seen when it comes to social change and justice and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. Statistically, in the polls, 18 to 28-year-olds are the game changers, and even younger. You know, I mean, they definitely are the game changers. And so, you know, the movement of what we're doing with United We Stand Fast, it's really the people's movement. I'm simply the creator. And what the experience of going through with UCLA, I mean, in the end, it just goes to show that when volunteers rise together, I mean, this is what this movement is for. It's for the people to take. Again, simply, I'm the creator, but it's for them, for we the people. And it just goes to show when we unite and we take on roles. I mean, last minute, the fest, people rose to be stage managers, putting up the sound, you know, dealing with the talent. They just volunteered. People knew what their strengths were, and they just filled those gaps perfectly and this flow of energy. And so, you know, looking out into the crowd and seeing all different, you know, races to genders to ages and a lot of young people, of course, it just goes to show that we're ready for a change. And because we have the internet, you know, I always like to say the revolution will not be, or evolution for that matter, but the revolution will not be televised. It will be mobilized or digitized for that matter. We can have this and will have this peaceful uprising. And once we take our government back and reform the system and create a movement of empowering and giving the tools to honest candidates to win, beginning with the congressional races and independent candidates, because I just see parties and money and politics fading away. I think accountability is going to rise, and here at this movement, working with many like-minded people, yourself, Honest Media, you, Honest Individuals, we can bring about accountability within our government and really everything throughout the world, Hollywood, TV, and so on. So that's really what I foresee happening. And once we do that, as you were talking about the inventions, the young people, I mean, it's no coincidence that the government squashed over 500 patents since the 1900s. I mean, you know, when you look at the government and the tie between the money they make off of suppressing technology, well, once we get honest people in our government, then, of course, technology is going to evolve. There's going to be good money. There's going to be cures. I mean, it's just going to go on and on. And I think people just want to live good lives, happy lives. And that's really what this movement's about.
Yeah, and it's truly like a universal kind of thing, because it's as we see with all this uprising going on all around the world, I mean, co-opted or not, there's still that organic group of people and that just that feeling there in all these countries where all these things are going on, that they're just kind of tired of the way things have been running. And I think it's getting to this point where it's getting global. You want to go over real quick a few of the people that were there at the fest, and then talk real quick about the fundraiser you guys are going to do, and what we're going to do moving forward.
Yeah, sure. You know, I definitely, you know, moving forward in a positive direction. I mean, obviously the fest is amazing. The energy. I mean, I had Dr. Jill Stein call me a couple of days after Immortal Technique, and you know, Dr. Stein, she's like, I've never experienced this kind of energy. Thank you. It's just humbling to hear from her, because there were a lot of obstacles that the Free and Equal Core team, you know, the ones who really stuck it out to the end. I mean, I just am so indebted to them and supporters as well. So yeah, at the fest, I mean, of course, Dr. Jill Stein was a speaker, Marianne Williamson, Pamela Donnelly. I mean, the list goes on and on. You were there in the March Against Monsanto. I mean, I just remind me of all the people. I don't even know where to start. Immortal Technique. You know, it's just, it was from Ben Spahn to Amber Lyne to Abby Martin of RT America. And
Wu-Tang.
And so, it was founders of Wu-Tang Clan. I mean, Capadonna and New God. I mean, it was just like such a diverse, awesome crowd of people, whether it's Honest Media and organizations and sponsors like Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps, is one of our strongest sponsors. Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream, you know, not going non-GMO, fair trade, and Nature Path Organics. So some really cool companies, and great media too. You know, RT covered it, and a lot of, you know, yourself and many others. So We Are Change, Luke Rukowski, and what an awesome guy. So I think it was more of just this movement about bringing everybody together very quickly and creating a shield. And of course, we have a direction too. So we're definitely taking this strategically to the next level, making sure we're fully funded and organized prior to giving the full green light. But we're definitely looking to raising the bar, it looks like, into spring 2015 for the next fest.
Awesome. That sounds good. So make sure you guys check out Free and Equal and support the United We Stand Festival. I mean, we're talking about world-class musicians, anti-establishment musicians, thinkers, activists. I was able to talk about the March Against Monsanto there, and we're talking about, you know, crossing lines between, you know, this music culture and this new anti-establishment rising sentiment coming from the youth. And it's just a great way to create waves and reach audiences with the message that typically wouldn't be reached, you know. So make sure you guys support that. Christina, thanks for calling in, and we'll have you back on here in maybe a few shows down the line, a couple weeks or a couple months down the line.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And for all of you guys that want to go to our website, check it out at Free and Equal. freeandequal.org. We're 501(c)(3) nonprofit. And Nick, I really appreciate you for having me. This movement's about empowering people to get involved in the voting process again, to recognize electoral fraud as an issue, from gerrymandering to electoral college to voter machines. And we're here to educate and inspire people to run for office and provide them the tools to truly have a free and equal chance of winning. So I think this tour and this fest and the many initiatives we have going on are really going to help build that foundation. So thanks so much for having me on tonight. Really appreciate it. And it's so right. Awesome meeting you last week, too.
Thanks for everything you do, Christina.
Likewise to all of you. Have a great night.
All right. Talk to you later. So it looks like DB's back on the line.
I got cut off, Nick. I got pulled over by a drone. I had to fly my credit card for my ticket.
And I think we have Justin King on the line. Is that you, brother?
That's me, yeah.
How's it going, man? So Justin King's one of our new journalists from the anti-media. I've been following his work for a long time. He's been writing for the Digital Journal. I'm sure you guys have probably seen a few of his articles. If you want to quickly just go over what you're all about, man, and a couple of your big articles you've had, and then we'll jump into some of these recent stories that we have coming up.
Well, typically I just try to tell the story from the point of view of the activist. It's something that gets glossed over in the mainstream media. They spend most of their time trying to present the establishment point of view and feed people the propaganda that they believe needs to be out there. There are a few outlets, Digital Journal is one of them, anti-media certainly is one of them, that allow journalists to give their real feelings about things. And I've kind of carved out a niche. I've covered, you know, the Boko Haram thing, the Million Mask March, a little bit of March Against Monsanto. I think you've done pretty well taking care of that yourself, though. but, yeah, I do a lot of coverage of Anonymous, actually. Probably
nice.
One of my...
So you were at the down at that Million Mask March. That was back in November 5th of 2013, right?
Right.
And apparently some guys got arrested down there, and they were, maybe you can tell the story a little better.
There were a few arrests. Most of them were normal arrests that happened at demonstrations, you know. People get picked up, they're home in a couple of hours, you know. They pick up, they're fine, they're released. However, there was one gentleman, Michael Carr, who he was on the White House fence. D.C. has 100 different law enforcement agencies, and they don't always talk to each other. He's being told by one agency that he needs to leave this area, while another agency has put up a police line around it, so he can't leave. So the kid's in a situation, no matter what he does, he's going to violate the law. So he puts his Guy Fawkes mask on and walks up to the police line and cuts it, and walks it out. He's promptly snatched up by Metro PD, thrown to the ground, stuffed in a patrol car. Seemed like a normal arrest, until the charges come back. He's hit with assault on a law enforcement officer, all kinds of stuff. He's looking at 10 years. The report that the officer filed, I have never seen such a work of fiction in my entire life. We had videos from every angle. Michael, the kid, did nothing to this cop. But, you know, he filed it. So last week they had the trial, or they were going to have a trial. And so we got subpoenaed, had to go up there, handed the videos, evidence over to lawyers. Within, I guess, prosecution was talking about the deal before, the day before, and within 20 minutes or so of having the videos, all of the major charges got dismissed, and he was only found guilty of destruction of city property, which is the same charge you would get if you were in high school and wrote on a locker or something. $50 fine, and $50 fine, and out the door he went. It was a real victory in the sense of proving that when something goes wrong, record it. Any law enforcement action, record it. If it weren't for all of the people that pulled out their phones and started recording when he got arrested, even though it looked legit, it looked like nothing, no big deal. They recorded it, they put it on YouTube, and it was available when this kid needed it. Those people stopped him from going to prison for something he didn't do.
Wow, see, that just goes to show the power of this new media paradigm. You know, it shows the power of the cell phone, of the internet, of of the live streaming stuff, and even with Skype. I mean, the program we use to run this show, I mean, it's, yeah, it's owned by Microsoft, but it's still a genius tool. And it just allows for such a opening of this whole new marketplace for this new media, right? And it's kind of this stuff that we're working on here with the anti-media, is trying to get the information directly from the people that are at the place and witnessing this stuff to the people that want to know about the news, you know. And it's perfect because you were there in at the Million Mass March and you covered the trial. And I mean, this is like the future of how journalism should work. And that's kind of the next topic I wanted to get into with these media distractions. And we'll go into this march against Monsanto towards the end here. But you know, last week, one of the top stories, and we're talking about it, this thing was on the front of Drudge, it was on Yahoo, it was on Google. I mean, these are basically the three biggest websites that eat up all the mainstream news consumer traffic. And they were talking about George Bush's dog that died of leukemia or whatever. Yes. And it's just like, how can we take this media seriously? And I guess the question I have for you, besides that, is what can we do to help get people off of this old media paradigm?
Well, it's funny. I actually had a kind of a bet going with an activist here in Florida, Michael Pendleton. We were talking. I broke a story about the police using basically military hardware to intercept cell phone calls. At the same time, I wrote a story on a dog that was with a homeless person, and people helped pay the dog's vet bills. Without a doubt, the dog, that story, was what people read. The problem is, even coming from journalists like me, people don't care as much as they used to. People want to get the soft story, the easy to digest, the thing that's going to make them feel better. The truth that sets men free is typically the truth they don't want to hear because it's going to make them question things. People are really comfortable in this country. You know, there are those of us that are awake and realize what's happening, but the vast majority of Americans don't have a clue and they don't want to know. They want to go to McDonald's, work their 8 hours, come home, drink their Coke, watch Netflix. That's what they want to do.
Yeah, yeah, it's true, man. But you know, the one bright spot I see, and it's sad because it has to come to this point. But as the middle class, and you know, most of the people we're talking about here are middle class type of people, mm-hmm. and the middle class is starting to get squeezed out. And what I think is going to happen, in my opinion, is that we're going to start seeing a bunch of people that normally, like you were just talking about, are normally just, you know, sitting on the couch and pulling the you know, 10 hours at the job and doing the McDonald's thing. These are the people that are really going to start getting to feel the pain soon as this middle class continues to shrink and as the economy, despite all the bogus news reports, continues to be very, very weak for the majority of people. Yeah, it's strong for a few people, you know, for the very few guys that are at the top. They're making big bucks, but the middle class has been stagnant since I saw a study since 2000, I think it might have been 2001. The US middle class income has only grown 0.3% compared to Canada and England at 20% and 19%. So I mean, we're talking about a big stagnation of the middle class, and for now it's still that people are still stuck in this reality TV stuff, but I think as the belt starts to tighten, people are going to start to question more.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. That's what's going to happen. We are at the beginning of a major shift, and things are going to have to get worse before they get better. Historically, if you look back, you know, people know 1776. Well, the real work started getting done in 1767. That's, you know, the Boston Massacre, the Boston Tea Party, all of this, this didn't happen in 1776. This happened in the years before. You know, all of the pamphlets that came out and people really starting to wake up. And it took, I mean, it took a decade for people to realize that they were getting screwed. And it's probably going to take even longer now. I mean, we've already been at this for 12 years. It's probably going to take longer now because the control systems that are in place today are a whole lot more effective than the ones the king had 200 years ago. We're going to have to try to break down those control systems. We're going to have to get your average American off the couch and out doing something, anything that will make them think.
Yeah, and you know, that's why I really like what Christina was doing. I don't know if you caught, I think you caught the end of that there. With the free and equal.
I was listening, yeah.
Yeah, with Free and Equal and the United We Stand Fest, and it's just a great way to cross over, you know, cross over from one audience to the other and just keep spreading this thing. And, you know, on the social media side of things, that's kind of what it's all about. You know, is crossing over and working together type of situation. And, you know, fortunately in the alternative media, more and more people are willing to work in that direction. You know, and I think that's where the shift is beginning to come. And then you got the people that are talking with their friends when they're sitting down at a barbecue or at a party and they're just talking with their friends about this stuff. And next thing you know, they're talking about drones. And, I think that's just how this stuff is spreading, and the beautiful thing about it all is that it's organic, and it's kind of like this chaotic order that's just coming together into place without having to be dictated like by a government or run by some kind of rigid corporate structure. I mean, it's just one of these beautiful things that is happening, and it's just coming together out of just pure anarchy, basically. And I think that it's just something that is never, they're never going to be able to put a lid on it, no matter what the government tries to do, no matter how much censoring they try to do, how much firewalling and all this stuff. And now you got this Bitcoin revolution, and I finally got a really good chance to learn about Bitcoin. It turns out my buddy lives right down the street, a friend lives right down the street that runs this company I didn't even know. And, called Bitcoin Kinetics, and he taught me all about it, and this stuff is going to change everything. So I think it's one of these things where once the lid has been popped and it popped a while back, it just there's no corking that bottle, you know, and I think that's, you know, hopefully where the media movement goes. Could they torpedo us? Yeah. I mean, they're trying to do it with this whole, you know, all this internet censorship stuff, CISPA and all this stuff. NSA has a total chilling effect on what people normally would be willing to talk about, and I think that's a huge another huge topic to talk about too is the chilling effect of the NSA. But we're trying to figure out this whole media thing, and you know, Bush's dog died, and it was a huge headline, and it was just ridiculous. And then you got this whole Brad Pitt thing throwing something from balcony to balcony with this other guy. And then you got the fact that the media completely ignored the Million Mass March. Why do you think the media, you know, pushes forward these bogus stories and then ignores all the like legitimate stories, the legitimate grievances?
Well, the media, as we're referring to it, I mean, it's owned by six companies in the U.S. These same companies are the companies that own shares in the major corporations that are causing most of the problems and causing most of the corruption in D.C. They don't want to report on it. I was amazed CNN actually took one of my stories on the Million Mass March. They vetted it, approved it. They even put it on their website. It got no airtime, okay? But it was on their website. If you were looking for it, you could find it. But if you weren't looking for it, there was no way. You did get coverage from Al Jazeera, RT, a couple Canadian networks, but U.S. media is going to ignore anything that is actually going to threaten the control system. The fact of the matter is the Million Mask March shut down Pennsylvania Avenue. They chased the Department of Justice security guards back inside the DOJ building. They shut the doors, shut their blast doors. This was a story. It's a huge story in reality. Got no coverage because they don't want people to know that there are organizations or collectives out there that are fighting back. You're not going to find these stories on Fox, CNN, any of these places.
Yeah, man, it's like, they feed us this bogus nonsense, you know. And then all the real stories get just completely ignored. And then, you know, we got this whole march against Monsanto coming up. And we're talking about one of the biggest, civil disobedience actions in the history of modern activism. And the last time around in October, it got completely ignored. And now this time around, you just posted a story on this today or yesterday about how these media outlets are actually kind of going on the offensive now. They've chosen, well, we can't just ignore them because now they've got such a presence on social media, we can't just ignore them. You know, and we're planning a Twitter storm for the day of the march, so we're planning on trending front page of Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff, hopefully. So, you know, they can't just ignore that now. So now it seems like they're almost going on the offensive to try to shut down to lower the amount of people that are upset about the food supply before these actions even take place.
I would expect to see more and more of it. The control systems that are in place are going to go on the offensive because they don't have a choice now. If they sit back and take it, activists will win. So they're going to try to make it as hard as possible to get the message out. And what they did over the last 2 weeks, they started running stories about how great GMOs are, and if you don't like GMOs, you're as dumb as somebody that doesn't believe in evolution. That's actually in one of their articles. You're anti-science, and they're going to try to marginalize the groups. And it's something that the activist movement really, really needs to be prepared for. It's coming, it's going to happen. You're going to start getting resistance, and it will become popular with the middle class and those that are still sleeping to mock, oh, GMOs are good for you. I love GMOs. The same way you hear when a vegan is talking to somebody that eats meat, and I love bacon. You're going to hear that same thing. Very dismissive. I don't want to engage in this topic. CNN has already told me what I need to believe. And that's where it's coming to. And the activist movements have to be prepared to overcome that. They have to be willing to reach out to any journalist that is willing to run a story from their point of view. Talk to them. Get the story out there. You know, anything that you can do to offset that. And when these articles come out, troll them. Get on there, poke holes, because, it's definitely some creative writing. There's not a lot of news reporting in them. So
most of these anti-GMO stories I see will have, like, one or less hyperlink in the whole story. You know, they're literally just throwing out opinions. It's hilarious to see because most of these articles on GMOs are actually citing studies, albeit, yeah, a lot of them come from outside the United States. However, a lot of them are starting to come from within the United States that are showing that these, not only the GMOs, but the pesticides that correlate with these GMOs when you have the Roundup Ready crops and you use an excess of glyphosate, Roundup and things like that. There was just a study out of Sri Lanka that was done in correlation with UCLA, and they helped do this study, and it showed that these pesticides, the Roundup pesticide, is causing chronic kidney failure, chronic kidney disease in Sri Lanka. And they've also shown it in agricultural areas in Central America, Guatemala and places like this. So, the science is there. Now, one of the things I talked about today, I did an interview for a radio station here in San Diego, and a lot of the problem is that the science comes from the American science comes from, you know, funding from these same companies that they're trying to find, you know, do research on. So there is a bias in the American medical establishment, just like every other establishment that's run by the government, in the schooling system, in the banking system. I mean, we have all these issues, all these corruption, special interests, corporate control. So of course it's going to be coming out of the FDA and the USDA as well. I mean, these are the same people that have been telling us for how many years that weed is going to kill you, and that if you smoke weed, then you're going to get reefer madness and all this stuff. I mean, these are the same people that are telling us now that GMOs and Roundup and glyphosate and all this stuff is safe. I mean, and the problem is that the company that this whole march against Monsanto is going against, and by the way, anyone listening that doesn't know about the March Against Monsanto yet, you guys can check it out. Just Google March Against Monsanto or go to the Facebook page and just go to the link. You could find a March Against Monsanto anywhere in your area. I mean, they're literally in every single continent. And it's going on this Saturday, May 24th, so make sure you guys check it out. But we've got these problems that are just rampant in every side of this whole American government experiment, which has turned, it started as a republic, and then it's turned into what has now been proven by Stanford into an oligarchy, you know. And so it's to me, it's really not surprising that the media would try to derail this march against Monsanto thing. They went on for a year just trying to ignore it, and now it's just getting to that point. And I think it's because thanks to people like you and the journalists and the outlets in the alternative media, we don't allow these people to ignore these stories. Yeah, they're going to come on the offensive, but I mean, in my opinion, I think the more they come on the offensive, the more ammunition we have to use against them.
Oh, absolutely. Because there are going to be those people that when they see the story, they're going to want to know more, because the stories that are coming out are so thin that they know something isn't right. And it just takes, you know, a little nudge to get them off the couch and to start looking into it. And they'll realize that, you know, GMOs inherently, all GMO technology is not bad. But there's a lot of it that is. And it's something that it's a balance like any science. It's not good. It's not evil. It is what it is. And it is what we do with it. And a lot of the stuff that's being done with it right now, it is not for the betterment of mankind.
Yeah, and you know, the most common argument I see, you know, one of the most common comments, and it almost seems like these are either paid trolls or just people that are just so uninformed. But it's just a regurgitating talking point, and I see this comment everywhere. Monsanto has done more for preventing human hunger than anyone else in the world. And this is the most common comment that I see. But unfortunately, it's not really a reality, because human hunger isn't being solved. I mean, we can't even solve the hunger problem in this country. We have, you know, upwards of 30 million people every week that go hungry in this country, and they can't afford to get a meal to make sure that they were full. And when they do get that meal, they're getting this Monsanto stuff. So, it's funny that they love to call the anti-Monsanto movement anti-science, when in fact, if you want to talk about scientific method, I mean, no one just goes and says, oh, that's good. Like, we've done a few studies on GMOs, and they're good. There's nothing bad about them. The scientific method says that you should be questioning every single thing. So, I mean, it's so funny to say that it's anti-science, when in reality, the people that just believe it because it's being regurgitated on the mainstream media, these are the people that are actually anti-science, because they're not questioning anything. Science is all about questioning everything. It's just such a hypocritical argument, you know?
Well, when you get out of the U.S., and you don't look at the FDA, but you look at the World Health Organization, the World Health Organization certainly does not say GMOs are safe. They're saying that every single formula needs to be tested. You know, they're not going to say that they're all bad because, I mean, hey, insulin is a GMO product.
Hey, Justin, but, we're coming to the end of the show here. The music's coming in. Thanks for calling in, man. Right. Great discussion, man. Thanks for being on the anti-media team. Make sure you guys check out the site and follow Justin. And we'll catch you guys on the stereo.